From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made in Rochester on October 9th, Indigenous Peoples Day. It will also be made in Rochester this Sunday, October 1st, Italian Heritage Day. This year marks the city's second annual Indigenous Peoples Day, in the sense that it is the second year the day is officially recognized. Rochester City Council voted unanimously in June of last year to establish the second Monday in October as Indigenous Peoples Day, which honors Native American history and culture. Members of the Indigenous Peoples Day Committee told WXXI last year that the move was an opportunity to right the false narrative that has been taught in the educational system and to honor Native American people. Members of a local Italian Heritage Committee called Cugini di Rock support the change, and as they say, they've been working to build up a day where Italians can celebrate their own culture without centering Columbus or any one person. And that comes following efforts on a national level to refocus Columbus Day and draw attention to the violence and slavery that Columbus and other explorers perpetuated. Those efforts have led to about 200 different cities in this country renaming or replacing Columbus Day. And data shows about 29 states do not celebrate Columbus Day at all. Here in Rochester, Italian Heritage Day has been proclaimed by the city as the first Sunday in October, so that's coming up on Sunday. So what can you expect from the local celebrations of both these days this year? And can we learn by having conversations about our history with different groups of people and actually stopping to listen to each other? Our guests this hour are here to talk about all of it, and let me welcome them now. The co-chairs of the Indigenous Peoples Day Committee include Ronnie Pollock, who is a member of the Mississauga, the Credit First Nation, and Six Nations, the Grand River. How did I do, Ronnie?
Perfect.
All right. Hey, welcome back to the program. It's great to have you. Yep. Welcome as well to Kathy Castagna, who's co-chair and a member of Cugini di Rock. Am I pronouncing it? It is Cugini, right?
It's Cugini.
We're not speaking Spanish here. It's not Cugini. It's Cugini.
Exactly. Cugini. It means cousins. And we love that name because many of us who see each other and meet each other, we really think that there's a long past relationship that we're all related and cousins, right?
Well, welcome back to you.
Thank you.
And welcome as well to Joe Chafee, who is a member of Cugini di Rock and the Indigenous Peoples Day Committees. Thank you for being here.
Well, hello. Thank you, Evan.
And welcome to Trish Corcoran, co-chair of the Indigenous Peoples Day of Indigenous Peoples Day and educator at the Harley School and a member of the Tonawanda Onondaga.
Correct.
Okay.
Very good.
Great to have you, Trish. Thank you for being here.
Happy to be here.
Again, I just want to start by marking the dates here. Again, this Sunday, Italian Heritage Day, we're going to talk about the details of what's being celebrated. The events really, you know, wherever you're going to be celebrating, you can also head down to the public market, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., food, activities, music, free admission to the public market for Italian Heritage Day on Sunday. Indigenous Peoples Day, Monday, October 9th, and there's a lot going on from a sunrise ceremony onward, and we'll take you through all of that this hour. But you know, Ronnie, you and I have talked about this for years now, and I wonder if there is a sense of, sort of steady as she goes. Like, are you where you want to be with this, or are there still big changes you want to see?
Yeah, good question. I think, last year it was a lot of pinching myself, you know, like, wow, did this really happen? Yes, it did. And now moving forward, you know, just kind of onward and upward with our plans, but there's still a lot of work to be done. We do have this now established in Rochester, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that's instantaneously going to change our education. It's not instantaneously going to change other policies and procedures in regards to Native Americans and being more inclusive of our culture, of our ways, and really just telling our truth, telling the real history. I think there's still a lot of work to be done. It's the city of Rochester, but we are surrounded by a county. We are surrounded by other towns and villages that could also be doing the same effort and the same work.
And, you know, Ronnie, one of the things that kind of gets exasperating for me is my observation that, like, anytime you talk about whether it's Columbus Day, Thanksgiving, everything becomes so politicized and the culture wars just take over. And it's almost like people are trained now to not listen and go, hey, what side is that on? If that's not my team, then I'm against it. And instead of going, well, what's actually a productive way forward here? You know, why do people feel the way they do? And I understand people are not a monolith, but let's actually understand it. And then is there a different way? Because I think the straw man is, oh, so you don't want to celebrate Italian heritage. Well, obviously we're here talking about that, right? But how do you sort of deal with what feels like everything gets politicized and, you know, do you feel like you're pulling people across in any sense anymore? I mean, how do you do that?
That's a really good question, Evan. And I can answer that very quickly by a simple answer of I default to my culture. And my culture teaches me and advises me in a manner of peacekeeping. So I find personally, I don't necessarily get up into or get caught up in the political aspects of this issue. To me, it's my culture teaches me to be a peacekeeper and honor peacekeeping, much that was paved, by the way, and told through the story of our peacemaker. So to me, it's not about, I'm not trying to convince, right? I'm not trying to change anyone's mind. I'm happy to come alongside you, to have a conversation, to think critically maybe about this, but I'm never going to drag someone, right?
No,
I'm never going to like beat you over the head with this. It's more about, I just show up as who I am, as an Ongwe Hongwe indigenous woman, and that means I show up with my culture as well, too. So it's more about having a peaceful conversation and moving forward from there. It's never about, clanging cymbals and bells to be heard.
One of the things that I appreciate about Ronnie, like I have, when you do like 10 years of a talk show, you get this ecosystem of people in your mind. You're like, who are the constructive dialogue, you know, bridge builders? Who are the people who are probably going to blow up the bridge if it's offered in a dialogue? And what I find about you, if I could say this, Ronnie, is that when you've been on this program, whether it's with people who might disagree with you or might, you know, have, you know, concerns about changes to the culture or understanding history, what I think you do really, really well is we have a culture that is strawmanning a lot of arguments, and then we are aiming to steel man. We aim to really understand if someone disagrees, why do they disagree? And how do I actually understand how they got there? And what's the best possible argument they can marshal? And if it doesn't move me, how do I work with them to see my position accurately? And I actually have heard people describe themselves moving a little bit on these issues when it seems immovable. So I take your point that you're not dragging people across an aisle, but have you had people talk to you about, hey, you know, I didn't think I used to be on board with this, and I'm there now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. And sometimes, too, you know, again, something else that advises me through my culture is I share my story, or I share my family's story. Most significant to me, sharing my grandmother's story, or even currently my daughter's story, that sometimes that can be very advising when somebody has questions, or they're trying to determine, how does this make sense, or how does it make sense in a way that I need to choose a side. So I'm never, you know, going to end the conversation with, well, I hope, you know, I've told you what you need to hear so you can pick a side. You know, that's still a journey that someone needs to take. And I realize that's not going to happen in one conversation. So a lot of it is also done through storytelling, too, not only about my personal family, but about our culture and about our history, because there's so much that is misunderstood, or there is so much that just simply isn't known. So when people are like, well, no, I'm on this side or I'm on that side because of this, oftentimes they don't have the full story. Mm. They don't have the full awareness and understanding. So that's kind of a place where I come in as well, too, of, well, let me tell you, let me share with you. And I don't know, often it gets done in the form of storytelling.
Is there an example of a story that you like to share that is helpful?
Oh, wow.
Either a family story or some kind of experience?
I mean, you know what, a lot of the reason of why I do what I do is because of the shoulders I stand on. So my grandmother, who is a residential school survivor, I call her a thriver. She was there for over a decade. It's because of the atrocities that she went through. And then all of the then following intergenerational traumas and curses, if you will, that she had to deal with while raising a family of 11 children. She had 13 on a reservation that was very impoverished. I mean, you know, dirt floors, a one-bedroom home with that many children. So it's because of her, and it's also because of my mom, who was disenfranchised for over 20 years, having her identity taken away from her, from the government, because, again, they're always looking for ways and tactics to rid us. So it's because of what they went through and what they lived through is why I do what I do. And now, fast forward, some of the things that my daughter is currently dealing with and going through, I mean, that's a whole nother story. Maybe we can table that for some other time and some other day. But oftentimes it is because of, you know, my family's stories.
Sure. Yeah. Trisha, how do you feel about these, both of these celebrations coming up and where this community seems to have landed on what to do going forward?
I'm so excited. I too also have to pinch myself. I can't believe that this has come to pass, and I'm thrilled. I wish my mother and grandmother were here to see this. And I'm so proud of Rochester. I think that I have to give a nod to Black Lives Matter. I think that has helped elevate the conversation and have people look at things more realistically and from different perspectives. So nyawe to them. And I think we're also here because of relation building and people working together. And it's not like Indigenous Peoples Day Committee is all Indigenous people, far from it. It's everyone from the community working together. And I'm just absolutely thrilled.
Kathy, how are you feeling?
Wow. All right. Pinching ourselves is a big thing. Like, so I don't know that I would have predicted that we would be here. I mean, there's so much that is going to be coming up in the next couple of weeks that will just bring the excitement and joy that all of us in this room are feeling out to the community. And it's because we're all missing if we don't see the true beauty of our cultures and heritages. And what Ronnie said about education, these events are not just events. They're a chance to really dig deep a little bit into these cultures and heritages that have, well, for Indigenous people, been here forever, and for Italians that we brought in. And I love the part about the peacemaker story because, you know, when Italians came in, we experienced a lot of discrimination, and so we were given some ways to ameliorate that. We were given ways to give ourselves a little status, and Columbus was one of those. So I can understand why people did it. So I'm not in any way begrudging the people who have held on to that symbol because they felt like, oh my God, what if we don't have that? Who are we going to be? Because we've been, you know, struggling with discrimination. And we're also a people who have stood for social justice. And I've been looking in my history of all these social justice warriors, including my mother. So our ancestors are important, but my mom was such a social justice warrior. And I feel like, so we're that too. We don't just have to be one thing. I understand that we have that woundedness. And now these festivals, events, we'll call them, will be just such a glorious day to share that beauty with everyone in our community. So yeah, we're just truly excited. And I have to say, behind all of us in this room are teams of people working tirelessly right now. You know, lots of people. If we put both our committees together, it'd be over hundreds of people who are just doing the nitty-gritty work every day to make these a success. So, yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Joe, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling really good about the festival or the Italian Heritage Day celebration coming up. I think that it offers a little bit something different, maybe something that we haven't had in Rochester in a while. And to celebrate really our cultural, our deep connections to our history. And also, of course, our Italian-American experience here, too, as well.
So let's do it chronologically, and let's work through what the community can expect coming up here. So this coming Sunday Italian Heritage Day. Events at the public market from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Food, activities, music, free. Kathy, take me through it. Joe, go ahead.
I'll start, Joe, and then you pick up from there. Okay. So we really wanted to design this so that people could interact with our culture, not just be passive observers to something. You know, it's one thing to engage in the food. We love our food, and that'll all totally be there. Joe will talk about that in a minute. But the other is that we have pieces of our culture that we want people to know about. So here's some of the booths that we've designed, and they're called our Culture and Heritage Booths. So our IT language program is going to be there in full force doing a language booth where they talk about Italian and what it means, speak Italian, and all of that. We're excited about our storytelling. So the city archivist is going to be with us, and they have set up a very professional station where we are going to capture the stories of Italians and what it was like to grow up Italian and any place that we grew up Italian. And those are going to be archived for the city. We're feeling like we're losing some of those oral histories, and we need those, and we're capturing those there. So Christina is working with a whole team of people to make that happen. Then we have a food booth where we're doing demonstrations of how to make arancini. Every year we'll do a different dish, but this year arancini, which is an incredibly delicious rice dish. And then we have visual and performing arts where we're going to have a little bit of dance instruction, tarantella probably, and other dances, and some learning about dance and performing arts in Italy. Then we have a gesturing booth. As some of you who know us Italians, we talk with our hands, and there's a reason for that. And we're going to teach some of those gestures.
You have, well, hold on a second. You have a gesturing booth.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's so exciting.
Very deep history.
Can I tell a brief true story here?
Sure.
I was in Italy last summer, and there was a five-year-old in a swimming pool, and he just an Italian kid, very nice kid. His family lived on the property. And he didn't speak any English, but he was telling my friend to get in the pool. And another friend of mine was translating, and he was like, "There's no sharks, like get in the pool." And then he does this gesture with both hands. He was like, "Get in the pool!" And the both hands, and I'm going, like, it must be just innate. It was really, it was like cartoonish and really funny and cool and beautiful. So the fact that you're doing a gesturing booth, you know, I feel like when it's both hands,
yeah.
I was in Siena watching a Serie A match, and every time the crowd was upset, it was both hands.
Yes.
And then when they were celebrating a goal, it was both hands up.
Very
so
exuberant.
It was very exuberant. So, but what are we going to learn in the booth?
Well, we're pretty passionate people, and we are exuberant. And the gesturing, we were just in Sicily. Joe and I were there with a group recently, and I stood and watched two men have a conversation. I was too far to hear the words, but I knew exactly what they were saying to each other. Just watching them gesture. And it has a long history that we'll also share at the booth.
So interesting.
About why we do it. I mean, we're in many ways a multicultural. The southern Italy and Sicily are very multicultural because so many invaders came in, like 18 different invaders. You can imagine culture, language, everything was changing all the time. And we had to survive that through how we had our own communication, in some cases, secret communication, right? So it's
so fascinating.
Really amazing. So we have a great way to teach gesturing through games, and we're going to be doing that. Then we have another booth of games, which is teaching a card game called Scopa, which is an Italian card game, and Bocce. And then we have Origins and Migration booth, where people are going to pinpoint where their families are from in Italy and where they came to in the U.S. We have children's activities. We have arts, crafts. We have a community building booth. It's a lot. And each one of those has a whole team behind them.
That's awesome.
So it's people are what's joyful for me mostly is that people are just finding each other through this event, like calling us saying, "Oh, my God, I've always wanted this." Right. And now it's happening. How can I help? And that is just brought us great joy. So, and a lot of our ability to do this is thanks to our partners. So Public Market has been amazing what they're doing for us. The City of Rochester, the RIT program, we have two major supporters. I'm going to say them, Dr. John Bill Valenti and John Nympho. Both were incredible supporters when they found out about this, came right on. I don't even know if I should name them. There's a lot. But
be careful.
So,
I know.
Once you go down that road, RIT has come through with so much, and we really appreciate that a lot. So all those supporters came in, and all this just started to take on a life of its own, and now it's going to be annual. So we're putting, you know.
You expect an annual at the market, you think?
Probably. I mean,
it's great. It's a great spot.
It's a perfect. What has attracted people a lot is that our families have a long history as Italians with that market. So it brings back a certain nostalgia that we all have of the stories of our parents and grandparents being at that market. And so it's very connected, and that's a beautiful location. And the city, Jim Farr of the Public Market, said, I've always wanted an Italian day here. So it was a perfect fit.
What do you want to add here?
Yeah, and in the Public Market, we thought, with the storytelling, we thought that connection, because every time you mention the Public Market, there's this, with the Sicilians and Sicilian-American and Italian-American, there's this connection of, they have a small story or a big story about their family's connection to the market, being there on Saturdays and Sundays or Saturdays and going back, you know. And we noticed that in the community, it really kind of pushed our storytelling aspect to the festival. We knew that there's people want to share that, you know, and feel good about that.
I love the idea of connecting people, especially where the heritage may come from. And, you know, Italy's got such interesting geography. All the regions are almost like their own little identity, and it's it's just lovely. All right, so 11 to 4 is when it's happening.
Right, okay. And Joe can tell you he's in charge of entertainment, so the entertainment stage, while all the other cultural heritage is going on.
Yeah, what's coming up there, Joe?
Right, so we have a variety of singing going on. We have Michael Sidoti, who's going to be doing the kind of DJing and singing and doing the Italian-American variety and Italian songs, too. And we have opera singers. We have a variety of opera singers from professional to some students that are singing and some high school students. And so that's going to be a little bit different. We're going to have that kind of intertwined with the storytelling. So throughout the day, or throughout maybe the chunk of the middle of the day especially, too, we're going to have a lot of the back and forth between the singing and the storytelling and music playing.
I still have a little Zucchero on my playlist, an Italian pop star from, I think, from the aughts. I'm sure Zucchero's still around.
A little sugar?
But like me, Zucchero means sugar, right? Yeah. See? But like me, he's a little older now. He's probably still performing. Anyway, so great entertainment there. And again, it is free.
It's correct. Totally free.
It's free to show up anytime. Don't Everybody have to be there right at 11. Just if you got time on Sunday, 11 to 4 at the Public Market.
Right.
And obviously, you don't have to be Italian or Italian.
That's right.
No,
everybody can come.
We want to teach to everybody. I mean, our generations are sometimes losing some of what we've had. Mm-hmm. And so it's definitely important for the younger people and who are Italian, Italian American. And every place I go, people say, oh my God, I've been to Italy, or I love Italian food, or I'm married to somebody. I'm like, yes. So, you know, hey, this is us.
This is the day.
We want to share that deep connection, that deep history, tradition, but deep history of a variety of cultures that have, you know, over a long period of time, our mixed cultures came together as Italians and Sicilians.
All right, again, one more point. Food?
Okay, the food vendors. Joe, do you want to share who they are? We have some great food.
Yeah, so we have Mama Napoli. We have Al Dente Pasta. We have Artichoke Lady. We have Salvatore's. People know Salvatore's Pizza. We have pastries, and we have coffee. And
we have wine and beer.
We have wine and beer, too.
You don't have to whisper
at the public
it.
Market.
We have wine and beer.
We got wine and beer.
Everybody's like, we have to have wine. How do you have an Italian thing without wine? So it's all Italian, wine and beer.
So it's all happening on Sunday. That's Italian Heritage Day. Mm-hmm. And sounds like the start of a tradition that very well could be in that spot for many, many years to come. And it's the culmination of years of work that Kathy and Ronnie and so many others here and not in this room have been working toward, a chance to separate, celebrate, respect, and honor. And when we come back from our only break, we're going to work through what is coming up to honor Indigenous people. So we will talk about Monday, October 9th, but also want to let you know about what's coming up on Saturday as well with Orange Shirt Day. And we're going to talk about all of this so you're ready and prepared as we talk about Indigenous Peoples Day and Italian Heritage Day here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we welcome economist Melissa Carney, the author of the brand new book, The Two-Parent Privilege, How Americans Stopped Getting Married and Started Falling Behind. The book is really on fire. People are talking about not just the data that Carney has collected, but the policy prescriptions she offers and what might change things. And we'll talk about it with her next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. There in Rochester, at least, is Indigenous Peoples Day. A long debate in this community, frankly, in this country, about whether we should still celebrate Columbus Day. And what you are hearing this hour is a conversation about, I think, a committee of folks who have been committed to making sure that there was a constructive path forward here that didn't denigrate people who wanted to preserve Columbus Day or tried to understand why that particular avatar of Italian heritage was chosen, what it means for Indigenous people, and then what do you do about that going forward? So on Sunday, it's Italian Heritage Day, as we've been talking about, and then there's a number of events leading up to Indigenous Peoples Day, which is Monday, the second Monday of October, October 9th this year. Starting tonight at the Little Theater at 7 p.m., the doors will open at 6:30 for a free event, Home from School, The Children of Carlisle. And I want to give Ronnie Pollack and Trish Corcoran some time to tell you about that here. What's coming up here with that tonight?
Okay. Yes, we're thrilled that the Little Theater is helping us put this on. And also RIT and NTID have contributed as well to the event. And the Harley School has supported us. And we're so pleased to be putting on this film, Home from School, The Children of Carlisle. Carlisle, Pennsylvania was called the flagship, quote unquote, of Indian boarding schools, which was a program that went on for over 100 years in the United States and also in Canada. Ronnie can speak to that more. Of stealing Native children from their families. It was United States law that all Native American children had to go to these boarding schools. And not only were their languages and everything about being Native American was stripped of them and was illegal, their hair was cut, they were washed in kerosene, scrubbed in kerosene. And it was a brutal environment. To call it a school is really wrong. It was more of a military camp and a labor camp.
And Ronnie, you said in your own family, your grandmother?
Yeah, my grandmother, she was a victim, if you will, of what we refer to as the Mush Hole. It's the Mohawk Institute. It was the first residential school established in Canada and then the one that existed for the longest, closing only as recently as 1970. And the reason we call it the Mush Hole is because that's all the children were fed there for three meals a day was mush.
This is the kind of thing, Ronnie, that, you know, when we've talked about what kids are, what American kids of all backgrounds are taught in typical American schools, United States public schools, this was definitely not in the curriculum when I was growing up. And I don't know how often this is taught even now as we, quote unquote, improve or broaden the education. But I wonder what it would do for cultural understanding if kids growing up today understood that this happened.
I'm proud of the fact that at the Harley School just last year, well, first of all, I should say that my position at the Harley School is really unique this year in that I developed a curriculum over the summer and then am putting that in place nursery through 12th grade, and it's educating the students about Native American culture as well as environmental sustainability, combining the two because they're intertwined. And last year, through our E.E. Ford grant on sustainability, I put together a program with Witness to Injustice of a blanket exercise, which takes a lot more explanation than we have time for, perhaps. But it takes you through 500 years of history, but you're physically walking through it because the students become the Native Americans and they're standing on blankets. The blankets is the land, and the land keeps receding, being taken away from them as the blankets are diminished. And Ronnie and Kathy actually came over to the school and helped me, along with the faculty and staff at the Harley School, of taking the freshman students through that program. And it was very moving for us, but the students were extremely receptive of it. And their feedback and their comments were just astounding. I was so proud. So I'm proud of the Harley School for taking that step and moving forward with something like that. And I think it'll make a big difference in people's understanding, because there isn't a Native American alive today that isn't affected by the boarding school system and the residential school system. We all have a relative or many relatives that were there. My mother only escaped it because they moved off of Tonawanda and came to Rochester. She graduated from East High School, but she would have gone like every one of her cousins from Tonawanda who went. And my grandmother was forced into three different schools in the course of her lifetime, Carlisle being one of them.
So that is tonight at the Little Home from School, The Children of Carlisle at Little Theater Number 1. Doors open at 6:30. The film is at 7, and it is free. On Saturday, I want to tell you about Orange Shirt Day, which is coming up this Saturday, creating awareness of the individual, family, and community intergeneration impact of such schools. So what should happen on Saturday, Ronnie and Trish?
Yeah, Saturday, I'll just give some background, and then if you want to talk about the events, that'd be great. But Orange Shirt Day, it's something that originated in Canada, and this was largely out of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and it highlights one particular woman's, who's still alive today, her story and her experience with residential school. But it's a day, it is, I believe, a federal holiday in Canada where everybody takes pause and remembrance. I believe it is called Truth and Reconciliation Day, also referred to as Orange Shirt Day. It's something that is, I believe, slowly catching on in the United States, but it's a day to create awareness of this atrocity that happened for about 100 years plus in Turtle Island, in Canada and in the U.S., but it creates awareness that, again, like you were referencing before, is often missing from our education.
Yeah.
And to that point, too, right, if that was in our education, how much different it would be. Because oftentimes, as Native Americans, as Indigenous people, we deal with this invisibility factor. And it's because so much of our true history has not been told. It's been left out. So if it was there and children learned it from an early age, perhaps things would be different. I know when I talk to adults and I am creating awareness, or, you know, telling them maybe for the first time about residential school and that whole atrocity that happened, it's very compelling. You know, it's something that often adults are very surprised to learn about, especially that they have never learned that before.
You want to add to that, Trish?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I've ever met a person in my entire life that knew about Indian boarding schools, had ever heard of it until 2 years ago when the mass graves were found in Canada. If I mentioned it, I mean, no one ever knew what I was talking about. And yet it's such a huge part of all of our lives if you're Native American. And it's really sad, too, that for forever, we, the Native American community, has been saying that our children are still there, that there were mass graves and that there were thousands of children that never came home. And no one listened to us or believed us. But we have great technology these days, and actually technology has made a difference. It was technology that found those bodies and technology that said that they were down there, and people believed the technology. And then the technology helped us again by getting the word out there. And so that has made a huge difference in Canada and the U.S., and Deb Haaland is has formed a commission to investigate more of what's going on here in the States. And so we hope to make a great difference. And having events like this film tonight and Orange Shirt Day on Saturday will raise awareness and help educate people about this.
Well, Indigenous Peoples Day is Monday, October 9th. couple of Mondays from now, starting with a sunrise ceremony at 7 a.m. at Cobbs Hill Reservoir. And that's going to include the story of the peacemaker, a ceremony of remembrance, some morning snacks provided, and then Cobbs Hill cleanup following the ceremony. The main celebration starting at 11 a.m. at Genesee Valley Park. Can you both tell us about that?
Yeah, it's at the location by the Roundhouse, and that's a really important location for us because it was a point where people from all over what's currently known as Canada, the north side of Lake Ontario, would come across trading and would enter Arundicoit Bay and come up Arundicoit River. Back in those days, it was called the River. Not too long ago, actually, it was Mount Morris Dam and the Erie Canal that changed that. But they would come up Arundicoit River to Ellison Park, to the area that's now called Indian Landing. And it's named that because that is where the native people would land and then carry their canoes, portage across Highland Avenue down to right where we're having Indigenous Peoples Day in Genesee Valley Park. It's currently where the canal crosses Genesee Valley, but that's where Red Creek came in, and we would put our canoes in there and head south so we could go way up into Letchworth and whatnot and beyond. So that's the location where we're having our day, and we're having dancing and food and vendors and many educational tables and music, and all day there will be something for everyone.
All day. So starting at 11 a.m. with the main celebration at Genesee Valley Park on the 9th of October. So if you show up at noon, if you show up at 2, 4 o'clock, there's stuff going on.
Yes, right up until about 5:30, and then we're going to start to head over at 6 o'clock for the sunset ceremony, which will be right on the Genesee River. We're going to be on the bridge across the Genesee River, and it should be absolutely lovely.
Ronnie, is this... You know, if we had talked 5 years ago and this was sort of the plan, what would you have said?
I don't know that I would have had words because I wouldn't have believed it. But here we are. And this, to me, it just feels like such a comprehensive, robust, you know, at the same time, very organic and holistic celebratory day honoring Indigenous people. So it's one, you know, where I feel just extremely grateful for the team of people that have surrounded us, you know, to get this officially to happen and be recognized and voted positively for last year. But now, this year and moving forward, you know, we're really excited about all this celebration. And also, too, with the celebration is the education. Much like Kathy said for Italian Heritage Day, it's come experience our culture, but there's also education to be had. So very much the same thing with Indigenous Peoples Day. Yes, there are fun events that people can come and be a part of, witness, participate in, but there's also a significant amount of education that will be there at the same time.
So you're set now. If you've been joining us this hour, we're talking about Indigenous Peoples Day, Monday, October 9th, and Italian Heritage Day, which is this Sunday coming up here, October 1st. And that's really the plan going forward. You have two separate days celebrating and honoring and remembering. Now, of course, with Indigenous Peoples Day, there are a number of other things going on starting tonight at the Little Theater. With the film, we're going to tell you later this week, and I want to send a note out to Kay Wilbert and the wonderful team that is going to be working with Ganondagan for the Iapaha Native American Concert of Music and Dance. That's coming up on October 8th on Sunday at Ganondagan, and had a lovely conversation with Kay, former local school teacher, and now working to put together this great event, and you're going to hear that later this week because we want to make sure that you're up to speed on all the things that are happening in our community. We are also going to be talking in the days to come about the fact that even Hollywood is, you might have seen trailers for the new film about the Osage Massacre and a film with Leonardo DiCaprio and Robert De Niro and big stars along with Indigenous stars telling a dark but important part of American history through a Hollywood lens. And so there's, I think, a lot of focus. And to me, Kathy, this is, it all feels, I mean, this is going to be a strange word, but it all feels like appropriate. You know, it feels kind of like finally, like we can talk about things directly. We don't have to run from our history. It is not anti-American to talk about your history. It is not, you know, some sort of subversive act to understand residential schools, the intentional stripping away of culture, everything from forced cutting of hair to, you know, forced removal of language and culture and tradition. That is, to me, is not anti-American. That's just, it's okay to talk about that. In fact, if we don't talk about this, we're in real trouble, I think, because what do we repeat if we don't, Kathy? That's kind of where my mind goes.
Well, what's also very invisible to us is the cost we pay personally as humans, like our own humanity, our connection to the beauties of our cultures, is a cost. It's a painful cost, but we often don't have that conversation either. So by bringing these things to light, we're not less than, we're more, right? So knowing more brings us a greater understanding of our world around us. It helps our children to really understand the world so that we're not shocked and devastated when we hear this, like I did at 40 years old, and just wept when I heard about boarding schools. I like, what? How did I not know this, right? And I felt betrayed almost, right? I don't want the children in my world to feel that. And they're not less than for knowing. Because like you said, we have to have these conversations not full of blame and shame and guilt, but full of full knowledge because we deserve it. We need to know how to build a future based on what we know of the past, right?
Yeah, and I'm thinking of tonight, tomorrow night. The Little Theater has two separate nights of films. So tonight we've been talking about the event that is coming up tonight, Home from School, The Children of Carlisle at 7 p.m. at the Little. Tomorrow night, it's Carvin Eisen's new film called Home Access Denied, and it's the history of redlining in Rochester. It is a 21-minute film. We talked about it yesterday on this program. If you can't go tomorrow to the Little, it's going to be available online. You're going to want to share it because it's really tight, and it's this cogent description of redlining. The reason I'm bringing up these films in context is because I'm thinking about what I never saw in my own classrooms. And, you know, I'm helping figure out what my 11-year-old should be learning. And I remember when my son was born, I was talking to a friend of mine who had a 6-year-old daughter. And she said, we recently had our first real talk about racism. And she said, you know, we both cried, you know, white family. But she said, like, it was a way to try to talk to her 6-year-old as kids gain a sense of empathy and understanding. And, you know, we had this kind of talk about like, well, you know, like what's the right age to start putting some of these heavy bits of our history out there. And she said, well, you know, black families don't really wait till kids are 6. You can't. Mm-hmm. Indigenous families know about residential schools. They've been harmed for decades and their whole family history is often tied up in the tragedy of it. So they know from the start. And meanwhile, like our families are like, you know, like white families are like, well, you know, I don't know if it's the time and, you know, I don't know. It's a little uncomfortable. Well, yeah, it's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And there's age appropriate ways, I would think, to do it. So let me ask all of you, and I'll start with you, Ronnie. Like, I don't want to mock, and maybe I'm being ungenerous when I mock this idea, you know, of families like my own, white families going, well, I don't know if this is the time. I don't know if it's comfortable. Because I get it, like you don't want to hammer kids with tragic history of which they don't have knowledge yet and, you know, overwhelm them. But I think it's our responsibility to help them as they get older. It's, as Teacher Shane Wiegand, as Teacher James was talking about yesterday, appropriately finding ways to build that into education. Because if you don't, then you're 40, then you're 30, like I was, when you hear about redlining or residential schools and dispossession, or you still have kids in schools now coming home going, well, yeah, you know, like American Indians lived a long time ago. You know, you hear that all the time still from kids. So can I ask you to kind of start a conversation on what's the response when people say, well, I don't know yet, or I don't know if it's right yet?
Yeah, I'll speak from my own experience in that, I mean, I'm sure if you were to ask either of my children, they'd be like, no, mom keeps it real all the time, 100%. I mean, of course, that is with age appropriateness, you know, considering appropriate age development and their capacity to understand such big topics. But it, you know, anything... that's uncomfortable, that continues to be, you know, kind of pushed away or held, you know, quarantined until the right time, to me is always dangerous, because when there is no, you know, check the box, now you can release it. Now is the right time. So, you know, I'm just a realist, but I do it with, again, age appropriateness, and I do it in a loving way too, understanding that these topics are probably going to be hard. So as your mom, how can I be supportive at the same time and nurturing?
Who better to ask than Trish Corcoran, an educator at the Harley School? What do you think?
You can start very young. You just have to do it the right way. Mm-hmm. And there are some beautiful picture books out for very young children that address the boarding school issue. And through the picture books and just a few words, you can get the point across.
Do any come to mind real quick for listeners?
I'm
putting you on the spot.
I'm not a number is one.
Okay.
There are quite a few out there. Okay. I mean, you Google them and now they're
good
like
resources.
Popping up. But I'm not a number is a very good one. And so starting there is terrific. And then expanding out. I think this point is so important, and I'm so glad that you brought it up, because prior to Standing Rock, 87% of high school graduates in the United States thought that Native Americans were all dead, extinct, gone.
Long ago.
Yep.
Yeah.
87% thought we were no more. And thank goodness that Standing Rock has changed that, as well as a lot that's going on. But it's so important to get this word out there. And the other piece that I just want to mention about the boarding school system is that, though, thank goodness, it is now behind us, as of 1996 was the last one, closed in the United States. 96, that's when my son was born. Is that there are still people alive today that attended boarding schools, and the intergenerational trauma has been passed on to generations that have not attended boarding schools, and that is really hard. That is tough to overcome. So it's important that we address this issue.
Trisha, what's roughly the timeline for when these residential schools were in use?
They started in 1861. Yeah, 1861, I think. And they went on for over 100 years, and the last one closed in 1996.
96 is unbelievable.
Yeah. There are actually some that are still functioning today, but they're run by Native Americans. Native Americans have taken over the administration and teaching of them. And the other piece to that is that, it just went right out of my head. It's so...
That's no problem. I'm grateful for the education. And let me also, I'm looking at the clock. 2.5 minutes to squeeze in. Kathy and Joe, just briefly, again, I think that if kids in school also understood what Catholics and Irish and Italians experienced when they were coming in larger numbers to this country for the first time, I think it would be a warning that we've got this tendency to otherize. And it's like, what is the other, what's the otherization, you know, of the day here? But the more you understand about that, I think you start to see your historical patterns and maybe you can check it. I want to be optimistic anyway, Kathy, that's true.
I do too. And I have to say that, you know, having that understanding of what we lost, I keep going back to that, and what we're losing when we don't have any of that, it's really harming.
Yeah, and I'm not equating the experience of, you know, European immigrants to indigenous people. I'm simply pointing out that there have been all kinds of horrific things done to people who are quote-unquote different or other.
Exactly.
Throughout our history.
The same time I've learned about the boarding schools is when I learned about the nativist movement in our country, and I also cried with that because I said, oh, that was against us, right? And without knowing that, you know, you don't have a full picture of what our families did to survive and how what they had to do and how they think now, right? So... it was a missing piece from my education. And I don't know, Joe, you're younger, a lot younger than I am. What about you?
Yeah, about 45 seconds, Joe. What do you think?
Yeah, I think when in connecting and talking about, you know, culture, talking about racism and things like that. I start off, especially with Italian Americans and Sicilian Americans, I try to get the conversation going with our history, talking about our history and starting there. And a lot of people don't have that background, but in just thinking about that, getting people to think in that direction, and then going from there and connecting and seeing how it connects with other people and seeing how our experiences were similar but different, our paths. And I think that is a really good way to start that conversation. At least it's maybe how I've approached it. And then building a conversation from there.
Maybe opens a door once in a while?
Yes.
Yeah.
It helps.
What a day, and some important stuff coming up. But main thing to take away here is if you're not at the Little Theater tonight at 7 p.m. for the film Home from School, The Children of Carlisle, please know that coming up are two separate days of heritage celebration, commemoration. Italian Heritage Day is this Sunday. It's at the Public Market from 11 to 4, food, activities, music, and it is free. And that's just scratching the surface. They would love to see you there at the Public Market, 11 to 4, anytime in that time frame. And Indigenous Peoples Day is the second Monday, October 9th. A sunrise ceremony at Cobbs Hill Reservoir, but the main celebration starting 11 a.m. going essentially all day at Genesee Valley Park. And they will see you there. And to everyone here, Ronnie Pollack, Kathy Castagna, Trish Corcoran, Joe Chafee, thank you. Thanks for helping tell our community what's coming up here. Thanks for what you've done. We appreciate all of you.
Thank you, Evan.
Thank you.
And more connections coming up.